All right, we reconvene our tax relief for pollution control property advisory committee. And out of respect for some people that want to get on the road, which I certainly understand, that's the main reason that they're here, we want to get at the 3A, which is environmental benefit, a side or alternative item. So with that, I'll just push it out to the committee, and I'll probably have some comments too, but I want to let committee members start where they want.
Well, I've got a proposal that was distributed that I do not want to represent as something that Mike and I have agreed upon, because we've not talked upon about the last version. It does include the changes that he suggested and we sent out, but I then made, I think, a significant change, and I want to acknowledge that first to that, and it was to address something. I also want to just quickly address something that I think we all know, but just for clarity, because Valero has given us some communication that says, hey, we're not in front of you. We're not, our fuel's not in the purview of this commission. They're exactly right on that. They're exactly right. When we speak of Valero, we speak about an example of hydrotreaters and their ilk and a type of property that has made application. But nothing that we do here, frankly, if we're, as long as we are speaking about the rules, which is, I think, is what we are doing, we're speaking about future applications. We can't speak about past applications. And I want to make sure that there's no doubt that I know that, and I think everyone else here knows that, and that that part of the communication is important. From my standpoint, there's a case made to us. Keep at the site, just make some refinements to it. I can live with that myself. We do not have, from at least from my position, we don't have a problem with at the site. The current interpretation of at the site is blocking and has blocked many applications that we think are correctly blocked. And the refinement, the request to refine at the site has been to give guidance to justify why not everything that it's currently blocking should be blocked. And I can't get there. I don't know of anything at the site is currently blocking that shouldn't be blocked. But I can envision that that's possible because, as Mike and I have talked about, the at the site has been, is not referenced in the statute, or is not included in the statute. And it seems to me that there is the potential for property that has an environmental benefit a distance away from where some of that property is being taxed. And in that case, I agree that the statute should allow that property to be designated as tax exempt. So we tried to develop something that accommodates that case. I do think that what we have developed and distributed works in most of the situations around at the site, and I think with the further refinements, I think it catches the policy that was intended by the Constitution and by the legislature, and I don't know if we all agree upon that. Like I said, I know that was sent out late yesterday. I don't want to, you know, there's only part of this resolution and therefore clause that I think we've maybe come to some agreement on, but the entire thing is what would make sense to us. The finally, I want to note and make an argument for giving a short shot at the whereas clauses in the resolution. Now, I would not intend that everything we do through this type of resolution, but I will note that this issue of dividing productive property from pollution control property and apportioning exemptions appropriately to only the pollution control property has been the most contentious issue since the first adoption of Prop 2. I consider this round 4 on a continuing discussion of trying to refine the rules, because we recognize that that is always going to be a difficult thing for the agency to do. It is not, you know, we first started Prop 2, we had smokestacks and filters, it was clear. And then refineries found that it would be better for them to just buy an electric boiler with no smokestack. And now, so we've talked about that, and we talked them over the process to figure out, well, what would this, you know, what's the delta that you're spending there? Because we know that you have to have that to produce your good or service. And the concept I think we've always worked on. So we offer this as a furthering of this attempt to have the staff have rules that allow them to consistently, equally, and uniformly determine what is clearly pollution control, what is pollution control property, and what's productive property, and not designate as pollution control property, property that is productive. So, we offer this resolution. I think the importance of this issue, and I'll point out that this is the issue that prompted the legislature to create this advisory committee. Hydrotreaters and HRSGs are the issues that LBB looked at and reported on to the legislature and said, you need to do something. And they recommended a whole ton of exemptions be immediately taken away and required to reapply under a new standard. I think we all agreed that wasn't the spirit of Prop 2. We go forward. The legislature agreed, I think, with the stakeholders on that, on language that clarified, you know, we don't want anything in K to change the standard that we've historically had. And I think that's the spirit of what we've tried to do, and we're trying to further that here. But if there is an interest in saying, well, we don't like this, let's just refine at the site, we can work along those and keep at the site and refine it. I, for one, can work hard to do that, and I think we can. But I don't think if that means doing so in a way that expands the scope of what gets an exemption from what has historically not gotten an exemption, then that's where we're going to have a problem, unless it's something that we look at and isn't what we're talking about here, isn't replacing one productive property with different productive property. So I hope that tees off the discussion on this resolution.
Before we discuss this further, I should know this, but is Mr. Lee's proposal, is that on the table? Okay, the audience has seen it. All right, thank you.
Did we want to discuss the actual language of this proposal, or first discuss whether the refining the at the site versus this approach is the better approach, or how do you want to proceed?
Probably, if you discuss the language here, it may correct. It's probably encompassing.
Mm-hmm. I would just start with the discussion. I appreciate the efforts to reach a resolution and do what's expedient. I definitely am going to be a strong advocate that the commission not rely upon this geographic limitation, because I don't believe it's in the statute. I think we can skin the cat differently. Okay, the language that Don has proposed, I would, big surprise, want to change. I'm just to give you a preview, although I'm going to make a procedural suggestion, Mr. Chairman, that maybe we receive public comment. It might inform our debate. There's a lot of smart people in the audience that I'd like to hear from. Well, that's the purpose of the comment period sometimes. But that's the prerogative of the chair. I'll open it up to discussion. Rather than get into a detailed hashing out, maybe some great idea comes out and we use it.
Good point. Thanks. I think I will not only take that under advisement, I will do that. Paul Floor, is Paul still here? All right. Pete? Hope? Pate? Oh, sorry. PNP. Yes, if you would like to take comments, I'll give you comments. Yes, please, I think they want it on the record.
Okay. All right, we're coming. All right, I appreciate you having me. I'll keep my comments brief. I know you guys are very busy and you're doing your duties as an advisory committee. My name is Pete Pop. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Goose Creek Consolidated Independent School District. We collect taxes both for Goose Creek School District, Lee College, as well as the City of Baytown. So my employer is Goose Creek, but I'm here representing those three entities as we collect taxes for them. And we do have, I have the Exxon plant in my district boundary. That's why, you know, as you make this decision, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and try to beg you to not do it just for financial purposes, for schools and for cities and counties. And you, I'm sure you're all aware of those impacts. Our philosophy and, you know, the talks I've had with my school board and my constituents in our areas is, you know, these are EPA requirements. These are federal guidelines. Let the federal government give them tax credits. Let the federal government give them special treatment on any equipment through that process, and not at the expense of the local taxpayers in the state of Texas. 14 to 15 counties of people that hold these, have these plants, which we love them. These plants are great. I don't ever want anyone to think I'm against a plant. Our plant helps our schools so much with donations and other opportunities for our students. But having these plants, you know, we breathe the air, and it's, you know, sometimes it smells, sometimes it's not that bad, but, you know, we have the air, we live in those areas, and, you know, the thing about testifying, you lose kind of thought, but, excuse me, we do have, you know, we have a great relationship with those entities, and it's not an adversary in any way, shape, or form, and we definitely don't ever want it to become that, but, you know, the opportunities that exist, I think, to find a way to, you know, to treat any equipment that's for pollution control, it needs to be cognizant of that equipment has a specific purpose. You know, and that's why we are strongly in favor of the at-the-site requirement, or if you want to reword it some other way, that only the equipment that's used for pollution control is exempted, or and if it's not, isn't needed, then it doesn't get the exemption. Again, I didn't have a formal statement. I just wanted to let everybody know of who I represent and kind of what our feelings are, and you know, in the school district and city and college that we represent. I wouldn't want to be in your chair. You know, you have a tough decision to make, and I know that whatever decision you make, someone's not going to be happy, and that's probably the life in public service. I've done the same in school districts too, so. But I commend you all for your effort, and I know it's, you know, it is difficult, but just, you know, just want you to be cognizant of what the effect is going to be, because I just don't feel it's appropriate that those taxpayers in those 14 or 15 counties have to pay higher taxes because our tax values are down because these are exempt, and we're paying higher taxes for an EPA standard that affects either the nation as a whole or the whole state of Texas, and not may or may not even affect just our little area. So with that being said, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Bernardo Garcia. I'm sorry.
Yes, good afternoon. I humbly represent the Harris County Appraisal District, and I also have been asked to come here on behalf of the 600-plus taxing jurisdictions that are within the boundaries of Harris County. I have to start, because I can't get away from it, but I have to disagree with everything that Valero says in their letter. No offense, Parker, that's your job, but I think they miss some obvious points. They're asking you to consider an amendment that basically you then have to redefine something else. You're adding a definition within a definition, and that doesn't get you there. I also disagree with what John Kennedy said the last time with regards to the job is just to give the exemptions, let the legislature worry about it. Folks, what you're doing is you're transferring through these definitions, through these process, a tax burden from one group of property owners to another. And you're not letting the people that are going to bear that additional tax burden some degree of voice, some degree of consideration as to whether or not they really should bear that burden. Our history books call that taxation without representation. And you should consider it, and the commission should consider it, and I will tell them that, because that's what the jurisdictions are telling me. Now, some school districts have said, hey, no problem. The state's going to pick up the shortfall once we give the money back to the refineries or whichever company gets a particular exemption. The state will fund us. Big news, folks. The state's having problems. But who's going to pick up the shortfall for the cities, for the counties, for the municipal utility districts, for the other special fire districts and ambulance districts that provide a meaningful service within these areas where these companies are located at? Folks, you can't ignore that. There's a burden. There's a burden shifting here, and you have to be cognizant of the free economic effect of it, that if you do this here, what effect is it going to have down the road? You have to consider that. You can't do that in a vacuum, okay? And so consequently, it makes sense to keep the on-site requirement as proposed in Don Lee's resolution. It makes perfect sense. The people that are going to bear the burden of having to pay higher taxes for a longer period of time should receive the benefit there. I don't have to preach to you about unfunded state mandates, unfunded federal mandates, but to a certain extent, some of these exemptions might appear to be just that. The state says, here, given this exemption, but it's not being spread out equally. Now, the big problem I have with Valero's suggestion is that they're talking about an environmental benefit that is occurring at the plant site, and then their alternative is to the county. And that's kind of interesting because, on one hand, Valero tells us, oh, we have no inventory in Harris County. It's all being shipped out in interstate commerce. Now, that's what one lawyer is saying in one court case against us. Now, in a second situation, they're telling people, oh, no, we do sell here in Harris County. Well, which is it, Valero? Where is that benefit occurring? Okay? And that just doesn't make a lot of sense, folks. It simply does not. And if Valero installs, or any company installs, I don't care what it is, a widget that cleans up the mess that the hydrotreater makes, oh, great, let's exempt that. But you are then, if you don't do that, then you're then exempting my third problem with this situation, and that's a business model. I don't think that everybody here fully understands that Valero or the other refineries, they all have foreign trade zone exemptions. They bring in purposely, deliberately, strategically foreign dirty crude, high in sulfur, purposely. Why? It's tax exempt if it sits here. They then take this dirty product, create a refining process to clean it up to meet an EPA standard. Now, in this particular situation, because those are the facts that I'm aware of, as an example, this particular refinery, in excess of 71% of that refinery is composed of hydrotreaters. Why do they need so many hydrotreaters? Because that's all that they refine is dirty foreign crude. If they were to take, which is available, to my knowledge, I mean, I'm not in the oil business, I wouldn't know where to buy clean crude, but my understanding is that it is available out there. If you were to buy clean crude, either, I guess they can buy it from Saudi Arabia or some other facility, or they can buy it here in Texas, sweet Texas crude. And then they wouldn't need as many of these alleged pollution control devices. They wouldn't need that. 71% of their facility wouldn't have to have that many hydrotreaters, folks. That's the bottom line. So you have a business model here that is suddenly being driven by the desire to have this type of an exemption. And all I'm asking you, when you decide on these regulations with regards to an on-site requirement, that you do keep it in mind, because you're doing a shifting of a tax burden. You're also feeding a business model, and you have to decide whether it's worth feeding that business model, or is it worth feeding the jurisdictions that need the money to run their operations for the rest of the community. Those are all my comments. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm
yes, sir.
For, and I have signed up and passed earlier. May I?
Yes, please.
Supplement the comments you just heard.
So please reintroduce yourself on for the recording.
I am Paul McClure. I'm superintendent of Gregory Portland School District down just north of Corpus Christi. I would like to concur with all of the comments that were made by the former speaker, but I would like to edit one part of what he presented to you. He made note that under normal circumstances, school districts would be held harmless from an impact that would come about from decisions or recommendations that you as a body make and that the commissioners later will make. I want to point out to you that we are not operating under normal circumstances here in the state of Texas. The state currently has what is being predicted to be a $17 billion deficit going into the legislative session that will start in January. Under the current school finance laws that are in place and on the books and that the state follows and we follow, all of us as school districts operate at what is known as a target revenue level or a target funding level. And that is a cap at which school districts are able to generate money on a local basis. They cannot go above that cap, no matter how much value they have or what other source of revenue they generate through taxes. When value comes off the rolls at the magnitude that we have been hearing discussed, not necessarily here, but in the January 13 meeting that the commissioners were holding, that starts to affect school districts, particularly in the 15 smokestack counties along the coast. But as you know, there are other industries all over the state of Texas that would also be impacted by regulations you're going to be recommending and by decisions that the commissioners make. What you simply must understand is that if too much value comes off the roll too dramatically in too short a period of time, and there are not other ways for value to accrue to the rolls for school districts across the state of Texas, there is no way that a state that is in $17 billion of deficit can hold local school districts harmless, because there is not enough money at the state level to offset the impact of whatever happens to those individual school districts. There is other fine print in the school finance law that says when the state does not have sufficient funding to fully fund the formulas that are currently in place, that we as school districts, they as the state, will go into what is called proration in our industry. That is a form of discounting, and what will happen is the state will discount whatever revenue school districts are to receive all across the state of Texas. And if the state does go into a proration process, it won't just affect the school districts in the 15 smokestack counties along the coast of Texas. It will affect every school district across the state. So that you clearly understand how critical the funding issue is now for public schools in Texas, you need to know that as of this year, 50% of the school districts in the state of Texas are using fund balance, their savings accounts, in order to balance their current budgets. The prediction is that next year that number could grow to 55, 60, perhaps even 65%. So as you make your decisions, please understand that these types of decisions could make that issue even more problematic for all of the school districts in the state of Texas. I just wanted to correct that set of information for you so that you know how fundamental everything that you are deliberating today and whatever the commissioners will later deliberate will be for all of us. I have already told all of the extracurricular program activities in our school district that we may not have the money in our school district for this coming school year to use budgeted funds for extracurricular program activities. And I think all of you have probably lived in Texas long enough that you know what extracurricular programs are. Now, fortunately, my theater arts department has been doing their own fundraising for years, and they know how to operate on a self-sufficient basis. The image I want you to have is of head coaches, athletic directors, football players, and all of the others out on the street corner with a soup can that has had the Campbell soup label pulled away from it, doing this on the corners, collecting revenue so they can operate their programs. If we make cuts that are too deep, if we as local school districts cannot find other ways to offset that impact, if the state of Texas cannot make up the differential to us as school districts, this will all come back to you and to those people who sit on that dais up there. We would ask you to be as conservative as you can in making the decisions that you're making. I would recommend that you hold with what is already in place or to take Mr. Lee's recommendation. The least damage you do to the public entities of the state of Texas will be the best decision that all of you as a body can make. I thank you for the opportunity to make comments before you.
Thank you for your comments, and thank you for all the speakers. I would like to say that, remind everybody that, of course, we don't have open discretion to make any decision. We do have the parameters of the law. So that being said, I'll just leave that there. And Parker Wilson filled one out, but as if needed, and I don't know if he wants to pass on that now, Parker, or if you want to speak.
I'll pass right now.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. All right, we'll open it up more for committee discussion then. I would like to say that I think it would take significant more time for us if we go through the whereases that are discussed or proposed by Don Lee. I think some of us do have concerns about that. That's going to be fair to tell you.
And I wasn't going to refer to the whereases, but just the actual, what I view as the most important thing, which is the, you know, the therefore be it resolved. I'm wondering, Don, if you think it would make sense to, in part B, to make it clear is being wholly or partly used, constructed, acquired, installed, a meter, exceed, because we do have that, you know, we still want to give exemptions to people that are where the equipment is partially for pollution control and partially not. So to add, I think that would be the appropriate place to add it, I'm not sure, but just to make it clear that we still agree that in some cases, property can be both production and pollution control equipment.
So A on the list, it needs to be corrected, is that?
Well, I was thinking of that too, but I was worried that that would give the wrong signal, so I was instead proposing that the B be, say, is being wholly or partly used, constructed, et cetera.
Because it looks like A right now says if you're a partial, then it throws everything out.
Yeah, I'm not sure the way to fix it, but I think that issue needs to be addressed.
I think that's a really good suggestion, Cyrus. I'll just tell you, I was signaling before that I'd have some suggestions. I think the problem with A is it creates an exclusionary criteria for partials, and I just don't. I think we need to fix this issue. Okay. I just don't think we need to use that language to do it. I would propose that we strike A, that we insert what Cyrus has said, and then as a way to make it. I mean, the whole concept behind my approach to this is I would like to see the commission's rationale, whatever it is, in this process. And again, we're not disposing of the Valero case. We're talking about this rule revision moving forward to be based on statutory language. So I think wholly and partly helps us get more aligned to the statutory language. I think we need to add the term solely at the bottom of that phrase, at the bottom of B, when it says good or service and not from the use. It should say not solely. That was the language. I think that the last time we discussed this language, we put that term in because, again, as I understand it, the commission staff, from a legal perspective, is trying to link back to this provision of the law that uses that phrase. So I think solely should be inserted. Now,
where'd you put it?
Right after not. So good or service and not solely, insert solely from the use or characteristics. Last sentence.
Let me say, Cyrus and to Mike, that a solution, amendments to this that will clearly allow for partial use exemptions would fit the spirit of what we want to do. We do not have it in. We're not trying to kind of find a way to backdoor out partial use exemptions. We just do feel that it is imperative that we work the issue of separating productive use from pollution control use, and if you're producing something, you're productive. So if you file for something, it is producing a good or service. In my view, I don't see how that gets you a 100% exemption. A partial exemption, very well in many cases, may be there.
And you're referring to hydrotreaters again now, right?
Well, if you apply for, there's two things. If you apply for an exemption based upon a regulation of the product, I don't think that fits. I think there's probably stuff in a hydrotreater that is used to keep a hydrotreater from polluting in the production process. And that stuff ought to be identified, applications ought to be filed on it, and it ought to be determined to be exempt. But if you apply for a hydrotreater, and especially if you then cite a regulation, not for hydrotreaters, but of the product, then I think you've got a. I don't think you're at all tracking the statute, or that's authorized by the statute. So you could come back in and show that you've got equipment in the hydrotreaters that you have to have in order for the hydrotreaters to be compliant with environmental regulations, and that equipment ought to receive a positive determination. I kind of look over the staff sometimes to make sure that they don't think I'm just totally whacked when I say that. But I think that's how we've gone forward over the last 15, 17 years, however long it's been.
That striking A and including Cyrus's language and including solely where I suggested, don't you think that even with that remaining language, we have what you need?
I'm going to ask a question. So let me ask for Cyrus to tell me what his language is, because I didn't capture it when he said it.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying in B, saying is being wholly or partly used, constructed, acquired, installed to meet or exceed an adopted environmental rule or regulation.
Well, let's just go to the examples here. If I come up with a new process, a new hunk of equipment that produces widgets, and by using that equipment instead of other equipment, am I falling under that? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how we're addressing, I think, the reasons I put A in. And the reasons I put A in, I don't know, you guys know I try not to be too coy, is things like wind farms.
I wasn't suggesting taking A out. That was Mike suggesting. I was just suggesting in B, making it clear that a piece of equipment used for pollution control could be partially, it wouldn't have to be 100% pollution control.
It sounds like A and B might both need to be modified, but we got to look at what we're doing. We're saying let's replace a test that is currently used that says reduce pollution emissions at the site. Is that it? Reduce emissions at the site with a different test. So I want to ask myself and ask staff to think, help us think through, you know, are we giving them the, you know, a yes-no test? If we're just going to speak to a philosophy, I want to make sure we're not replacing a test with a kind of a statement of policy that then they don't know what to do with.
Don, if you strike A, what do you think, and make the revisions that were just suggested from Cyrus and from Mike, what do you think that would restrict, or what restrictions would result from that, do you think?
Tell me where you're going to insert what words so I can mark it up here.
All I'm doing is inserting wholly or partly used.
After is being?
Yeah.
And your motion or your recommendation is to keep part A in as is?
I'm fine with keeping A in. I could be convinced otherwise, but I think the reason for having A is to make it clear what you're going to exempt is the part that's for pollution control equipment, which is why you need the wholly or partly. You're not going to exempt the part that's used to produce a good or service. So I'm in favor of keeping A in, but I could be, you know, convinced otherwise or needs to be modified. The issue I was trying to get at is, you know, a natural gas plant can go one of two directions to meet NOx requirements. They can become more efficient by doing a combined cycle plant, which is going to be partially for production, but it's also going to help lower their emissions, or they can put a bunch of stuff at the end of the stack. So you kind of compare those two. So that's what I was trying to get at by wholly or partly. I wouldn't want to not have industries look at more efficient ways to meet pollution control requirements, but I don't want to give an exemption for the productive part of it.
It seems A contradicts B, is my concern.
What if A, you came in and put primarily, is not primarily used?
I think that's a good idea. I can't speak for Don because I didn't draft this with him, but I think what he's getting at in A is some odd cases like a wind farm where B alone would not deny an exemption for the whole thing. And if you added something like primarily, wind farm itself would not get the exemption. That would satisfy local governments. But something needs to be added to B that we weren't really thinking about at the last meeting would be like a wind farm, because they if a wind farm's part of a larger energy company, they're selling electricity. And so I could see a claim if it was just B that they should get the exemption for the turbines themselves because they're producing less emissions. And I don't think that's appropriate. So yeah, I think Roland's idea of primarily helps A somewhat.
I think the spirit of where Roland's going is very good, but let me be real clear. I don't got to get on the record about this wind example. Wind is not eligible because it isn't mandated by a rule, environmental rec.
But it is in Austin coming up. And Austin, the city council is passing a rule that the city can't sell energy that's not a certain percentage.
No. I was on the task force. What city council is going to consider is adopting Austin Energy's plan to get at least 30% of their electricity from wind or other renewables by 2020. But that's not an environmental rule. It's a statement of here's where we want to go in the future.
Right.
We do have a law in Texas that says you have to get a certain percentage of your electricity from renewable, but it's not a environmental law. It's a Public Utility Commission law.
Right.
We would not be supportive of, you know, exempting wind property for these purposes.
I would like the staff to stand up and correct me if I'm wrong. There are applications filed for wind farms citing the fact that they're not building polluting power plants. Instead, they're building wind farms, and therefore the wind farm is a pollution control device because the wind farm is being used, constructed or acquired, to meet or exceed an environmental regulation on the amount of emissions that that company emits.
I think those applications should be rejected because they are not subject to a requirement that that company has to. I mean, there's no
requirement to have a hydrotreater either.
Renewable portfolio standard. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want to go to Roland's idea because I think it's a good one, and I don't want to have this esoteric debate. But I have to get on the record about wind is not a good example because it is, if it's mandated in the marketplace, it's mandated as a matter of utility law. There might be an environmental benefit of it. I think we would all agree there is an environmental benefit of it. But I think it falls out on eligibility. I think it's a bad example for us to try to solve this debate on. Having said that, and we can take up that issue later, and if the commission wants our input on whether wind applications should apply, I think we can have a healthy discussion. But on Roland's suggestion, I'm open to the idea of taking A and going ahead and let it stay in if we insert it. I would use the term, so I would actually add the term solely after installed. I would say it's not used, constructed, acquired, or installed solely to produce a good or service. Going to the issue that Cyrus has raised, I mean, same intent, Roland. You're surprised that the lawyer would come up with some different word, but I think solely encompasses the statute. Again, solely is a term that actually appears in a repeated way, so I like the consistency of solely. I think it gets at the heart of what Bennett and Don have said, that we don't want folks to come in and be able to back-end production equipment, but it also allows for what I think is very important in the future, efficiency improvements and environmental benefits that we can get, even in equipment that, you know, has a partial production piece. We're not going to give them credit for the production piece. We're going to give them credit for the environmental piece.
I appreciate your interest, and I know what you're trying to do. You're wanting to get through this, and let's get a solution, and I appreciate that very much. But unless the following facts are true, I think it warrants we have to explore this issue, because the facts represented to me are that, A, there have been applications for positive determinations for wind farms, and they were denied because of the at-the-site provision. So if we're going to remove the at-the-site provision, then you have to tell me what we're proposing to replace it with is going to stop that application.
The law. The law that requires that an environmental regulation be the reason that a piece of equipment was installed. I just don't see any basis in the law for a wind application to be supported on that basis. Where it's not mandated specifically like a control piece of equipment.
Did those applications
represent any environmental regulation, and did the staff agree with that?
I understand staff said this doesn't meet, and the commission found that it doesn't meet the at-the-site requirement. They didn't say it wasn't an environmental regulation, because an environmental regulation was cited in the application. They said it didn't meet at-the-site. So tell me what I may be wrong.
No, environmental regulation was one of the issues, too. And the one that went before the district court, that was an issue that was raised there, was the lack of an environmental regulation. And that was, it was part of at-the-site and environmental regulation were the two reasons that it was given a negative determination.
Okay. And I think we've agreed that at-the-site has been useful in some contexts, and it was one of two good reasons why an application like that would be rejected. And I think what we're trying to do here is give the agency something that's based on the statute that still serves the purposes that we want. I'm certainly not being yipped on, because I think you have to think about examples like that. I think it is good to hear staff kind of reiterate that there's another basis for not having to do that. I'd hate to make bad law because something, you know, some kind of bad example could get through it. I think that doesn't even get to this stage. That goes to kind of where it stays in the flow chart. I mean, the flow chart kind of serves to screen things out. I think if we give them a test that they can put into the flow chart under this language, they're not going to have to reach most of the problems. But there's going to be some other situations, when would be one maybe, that they kick out for another reason. So I think if you add solely after installed to A, I think Cyrus's wholly or partly should still be after being in B.
Okay. What about Hersig's?
I think Hersig's go under a partial use determination, just like I think we would all agree, and we'll get to that discussion, they should.
Okay. So not 100%.
I think we're going to get there, but... Yeah. I think we're going to have a good conversation about that. I don't think this in any way ties the hands of the commission. And if it ends up that we find out that we think this does, I'd certainly be open to revisiting this decision.
Can I ask, this may be a dumb question, but if the CO2 regulations that we were talking about earlier go into effect, then isn't wind energy, by not producing greenhouse gases, is that non-environmental? Am I missing something?
It's got to be the entity that's filing the application has to have a mandate from an environmental regulatory agency. Okay, there are elements to the statute, and even if carbon's regulated, even if there's a national mandate for renewable energy, those are not environmental regulatory mandates on that specific site.
Yeah, but if I'm a lawyer for Entergy or somebody in Austin, I know, is my customer, and they have to buy 30% of their energy from renewables. I'm going to make an argument that that's an environmental regulation that I'm meeting by building wind farms. I may not succeed, but I'm going to think that I've got a shot with TCEQ staff. That's a good argument. It's better than some of the arguments I've seen in other areas. So I've got concerns about that.
Well, I hear y'all on the concern about that. And if we want to belt and suspender this with a motion that we would recommend that the commission put something in their rules to explicitly address that situation, let's do it. Or to add some language to what an environmental regulation is. But I think trying to predict or eliminate that situation with this language isn't the way to do it.
I think you could argue that A does eliminate it, because a wind turbine or a solar farm, solar panels, right, they're all used to produce a good or service, right, which is electricity. Right. They have environmental benefits.
It gets back to their CITCO too.
What if we tried?
That's their purpose under that.
Put in A that the property or proportion of property or portion of property that is subject to the application is not used, constructed, acquired, or installed to produce a good or service. To clearly indicate partial exemptions, mm-hmm, are possible, and that part that is producing is outside of it.
Right, and that was my reference to why I said it seems to conflict. B allows, A does not, as
right,
it is written.
Right. So let's make get them to conform, because we want them partial recognized in both.
I think is what you're saying, and I agree.
Right.
I agree. So the idea is that the property or portion of the property subject to the application is not used, constructed, acquired, or installed to produce a good or service. So if you file for a 50% application because that's how the cap plays out, then that's what you're filing for.
Don, why would you prefer to put it there rather than qualify A and B? You would rather put...
Well, to be honest, I haven't figured out quite what changes if you put wholly or partly in front of used, because I think used is going to... I mean, yeah, it's fine with me to put wholly or partly in front of used, but I don't think it changes anything. Property that's partly used is being used. Property that's wholly used is being used. So that was the thought there. So I don't have a problem with your amendment. I just don't think it addresses the issue of a piece of property that is being used to, you know, as we move towards environmental regulations that are outcome-based, not what-you-do-based, and you say, look, just show us you're reducing your emissions in this category by 10%. You know, okay, I'm shutting down my plant here that's old technology, and I'm starting up my new plant here that's new technology. I want 100% exemption on my new plant. That's what we don't want.
Fix on this.
Yeah.
I don't think we can do it at the very front because I think it would kind of discombobulate A and B, but we could add a sentiment to try to firm that up at the end to kind of make it clear that everything, besides what we all said, that the portion that is being applied for, okay, it's not just the portion of the actual physical property, it's the portion of the claim. I mean, sometimes it's a property and it's 50%. I'm not trying to be too particular, but I know what you're doing. I think it's a good idea. I think I'm okay with the concept of firming it up. I will say that wholly or partly, I mean, the law fixes this problem with wholly or partly. I mean, it just says, Commission, here's the statute, it's wholly or partly. We defer to you to decide, wholly or partly, whether it's an exemption. And I understand our role is to help the Commission help put more meat on the bones of this program to fix that. But that's why wholly and partly is so aligned with the statute, because that's how the legislature has given the Commission the ability to do what you're asking them to do, which is make a call. They're never mandated to give it all. And there's nothing in the statute that says they have to give it all. I agree with that.
Maybe the place to do it, Mike, is in the place before the A and B when we talk about the property under consideration. And that we make it clear, some language there that clearly allows for partial and recognizes partial, and that that's what we're talking about, that part of the property of which they're applying for.
Don, I might be fast-forwarding here, but I'm wondering which rules do you have in mind? I think I kind of know or have an idea of where you want to put this.
But I purposefully have avoided asking myself that question because the staff is drafting a rule change of which we have not seen. And so I wanted to see if we couldn't express a conclusion of this committee, some advice from this committee to them on drafting of this rule. And I didn't want to get in a situation where we said, well, draft this, and then maybe, you know, we're being very specific, and they've got a new structure that it doesn't fit into. And we've been very specific. So I purposely have wanted to do that. And if we feel that's necessary to look at, we're going to look at it when it comes back to us in the rule change process after it's been published, and then we'll be commenting on it then. But I don't know if y'all are allowed by y'all's policies to tell us how you might, and they're shaking their head no. So I haven't answered that question. I mean, I probably haven't even asked myself the question.
Well, Don, it was written revision or drafts, but can you give us verbal drafts? I think that's what he's asking. You can't. Well, that's fine.
All right, in a spirit of cooperation, how about we, I mean, I really like the use of wholly or partly, but the problem with saying portion of the property at the beginning and having wholly or partly, it kind of is silly to have both, okay? So if the interest of the committee is to insert the phrase portion of the in front of property in the first paragraph, mm-hmm. So you say a requirement that the portion of the property under consideration is colon A, you have the language that Don proposed, add the word solely after installed. And then B would stay, we wouldn't put wholly or partly there. Cyrus, tell me whether you agree, but if we put wholly or partly there, it seems silly because we're already talking about the portion of the property, right? And then we get to the end and we would repeat the solely concept that I asked for earlier in the last sentence where we say, in the production of a good or service, and not add the word solely from the use or. Because that part right there is particularly tied to the statute, and I think we need it there, too.
Although there are times when redundant language does make it very clear what you want to say. So, Mr. Falk.
Yeah, I'm okay with keeping wholly or partly. I don't think it's just not absolutely necessary if we put portion of the property.
I agree with you on that, but I also am okay to keep it if necessary. It seems like you're saying the portion of the property that's wholly or partly being used.
Right. Yeah, I guess that reiteration may help clarify what we mean, Bob. You're right. Don? So there's the edit. It's add portion of the in front of property, add solely after installed under subsection A, add wholly or partly between being and used under B, and add solely after not in the last sentence.
So moved.
All right, we have a motion and a second very quickly. Do we have additional discussion on this?
I just ask that we all kind of...
Just to be fair, I think, though he would like to move the entire resolution, he's probably moving just the therefore be it resolved part.
Correct. And oh, that's my understanding.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. And I would just say that we all have a lot of smart folks to go talk to about this language. We may have some unintended consequences. I'm open if anybody comes back next time and says, wait a second, we didn't think about this. We kind of did this on the fly. I think that's good. I think we're trying to move forward, but I'd like us to all kind of reserve the opportunity. We're going to make a decision here to give this recommendation, but that, you know, nobody's going to be surprised if we come back next meeting and say, well, wait a second.
I like that because some things that I proposed last meeting, I looked at very carefully the other day and have made my hair stand on end. So
I can
like
tell.
That. And I would also like to ask, Mike, that we ask the staff to give your thoughts to what making this change would do and give us your thoughts on that as well at the appropriate time. I guess, are we finalizing this today, Mr. Chairman?
I think that would be good to do that, yes.
So can I ask...
I will go back and say that if we have a lot of reservations about this, I don't want to rush it.
Well, I would point out that if the staff and the commission, if the commission takes our advice, they will draft a proposed rule that they will publish and will be presented to us for comment. And we can look at that and say, whoa, that's what we asked for? You know, and we can comment on it further there, but this moves it forward, and it is coming back to us at that time. I would say, if you let us, just see if they have any, you know, we're working off the cuff. Can we ask them to give any off-the-cuff comments they have where they think we've said something that's just wrong or we're on the wrong, you know, there's an impact we haven't contemplated. I just think there's a lot of experience there, and I don't want them to feel like they're not asked to stand up and say it.
Good point.
Yes, we're putting you on the spot.
As we said last time, this is, we are trying to get that, gather data for proposal. And what we are trying to do is to get something in for anybody to comment in. Because what we, if we do not have something in for comment, we won't be able to get it in. But if you can get whatever you are saying and we can put that in for comment, that would be very good.
So the information or the stuff that we just passed, if we can put that in a format for you, put it in where it goes in the boxes and what sections, that would be a good draft for you guys to look off of and work off of.
Yeah, like I say, nothing has to be final.
Right.
All we need is to put that statement in there for people to comment about it.
Can you
have a chance to comment again.
Can you draft that?
Does the TECQ, I don't know what the right word is, staff or executive director and all of his folks have any comments that they feel would be illustrative to us about what we're considering here? I would like to invite anyone there about the impact of this.
I also want to clarify from staff, are you allowed to do what you're being asked to do now? I hope you are. You can take concept.
Okay. Well, I just want to go over what I have on here. We have on here alternative source, what effect will have removing on-site. We have a negative determination have been issued based on not meeting an adopted environmental rule or environmental benefit at the site. This is for alternative energy source. And that includes wind farm, fuel cells, etc. The resolution, removal of environmental benefit at the site appears to make them more eligible, but still must meet rule requirement. Energy efficiency. Any comment?
He's saying if you remove it at the site, it makes alternative energy sources more likely to qualify, but they still have to comply with everything else.
Specifically, the requirement that a rule require it.
What we showed up with today, as modified by the committee, does that, in your opinion, maintain the same relative scope as before without the site in place?
I think so. Based on, like you say, depend on individual equipment. The main thing is that they have to meet other requirement, which is environmental regulation.
Can we ask the staff if any of them know of any applications that have been denied because of at the site that they think would probably qualify because of the changes we're contemplating? And there may be good ones that ought to qualify, right?
Let me read heat recovery. Here we have reduced emission based on avoided fuel combustion. Resolution, removal of environmental benefit at the site has no impact on heat recovery steam generators. The additional language appears to make them eligible. Does that help you?
I think so.
And I have another one here.
I have another question. I'm going a little bit different direction here. The draft that we have right now, is that sufficient to take out at the site in the flowcharts?
I think so. If you use the word you are saying earlier, and like I said again, we have to look at it, and there's nothing final. But it looks like you're in the right direction.
And the flowchart is the problem, or perceived problem, so that's why.
Right, and here's what, and I think Don was trying to get at this, and there's, you know, as everyone in here recognizes, there is a limit to which we can provide you guys with draft revisions. But I think the appropriate place for you all to start to implement this would be the rules currently on the books. We would let you know if we were going to completely throw out the flowchart. Or you know, anything along those lines. So if you start from what's currently there and then find a way to incorporate your proposal into the framework that's already currently in place, then I think we'd be much more likely to it would help staff review exactly. We'd be able to give you more definite answers as far as,
so you
would this piece of equipment qualify, would this piece of equipment not qualify, if we had a little more than
a concept if we had a little more meat on the bone.
So it's back to if we took the existing language, struck out, added what we just talked about.
Right.
And the flowcharts, the boxes, the rules.
The definition sections throughout. And then I think we would be able to more, to provide you with more insight into, based on the types of applications we've seen, what under those types of proposals would still qualify.
Unfortunately, Don didn't hear that, so, you know.
He said he wasn't feeling well and had to run out for a second, so.
Okay. All right. We will, that sounds like another meeting, but I'm open, we can talk about that.
What we just discussed, we can provide information at the end of today or tomorrow and shoot y'all a draft of that new language.
Right. Y'all don't have to meet for that. Y'all can just get the information to the staff.
So would it be okay, I'm thinking to cover myself too, is to is to pass it to the other committee members to make sure that we're on the same page with that. With that concept as it implements into the rules?
Correct.
And then send it to you, and maybe you publish it on a website for others to see too?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems, I mean, the heart of the deal, the heart of the agreement, we kind of worked out today, it sounds like, and the rest is implementation, so we could probably do that by email. I'm comfortable with that if everybody else is.
When you say the implementation, you basically mean the decision flow chart, what it would...
I mean, I think it's there's three elements that have to happen. You've got two flow chart boxes you have to deal with, and then you have two definitions that link to those flow charts. And so we just need to figure out what that looks like and come to agreement. And I don't think the language, because I think all of it should link, I think we should agree that all of it, whatever gets done, links back to this basic core language. And as long as that's the case, I think we're going to be in good shape.
Okay, any other discussion? We have a motion and a second on the floor to basically take the therefore and below. And I don't know if I should restate all this. I think we know where we are, or do we need to restate it? Okay.
No.
All right, we know where we are. And there's a, we have a motion and seconded. And any further discussion?
Can I ask just a hypothetical? Sorry.
Sure.
So if I'm a toy manufacturer and the EPA says you got to make sure you get the lead out of the toys, is the getting the lead out of the toys for toys that I can only sell without that lead in it, is that pollution control equipment or is that part of my production process?
No, that's safety. No.
No.
That's a question.
Under this, I'm saying under this definition.
It shouldn't get an exemption.
Okay.
I think it...
That's my opinion.
I think it is excluded because it is being used...
the characteristics.
It's about the characteristics of the good or service, about the good.
Okay.
So the deleading plant that they have to build that all new toys must go through, right?
By manufacturers, I don't actually understand the process, but...
Or the deleading unit, whatever it is, is not being used, or is being used because of a regulation of the characteristics of the good. So therefore, it fails.
Abundance of caution. And since we're still in the discussion part, since this is supposedly supposed to align with the law, I just want to ask both Mike and the staff attorneys and anybody else in the audience, do you know of a reason why this does not align with the law?
And I think it reflects a further implementation of the principle of wholly or partly that's in the statute. I think it's consistent with that.
All right. That being said, Greg's not here for the vote, but I think we can, since he's coming in. Hurry, Greg, we're about to vote.
And then right. while Greg sits down, and it's the wholly or partly language is in the constitutional amendment, too, in case y'all were wondering.
Okay, good. That gives me a bit of comfort. So, we'll call the vote now. Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion carries. And I will work to try to pull together some implementation. And Don, I don't think you were in the room, but Tim basically said, I don't know if he told you, but they do want us to strike out an underlying language in the rules, propose something to them.
Come up with some
system with this.
Okay. So we're just going to do this with the email, sir?
Right.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I have a very important meeting in Houston at 5 o'clock, and I have to get on the road.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Will you take a bio break or anything, dude? Everybody okay? All right, we'll go next down the list then. Let's go back to Part B, who would. We've had some discussion on Part B, so I open that up for discussion.
It may be a good process suggestion that we take up the cap discussion. I think some of our Part B discussions may depend on the cap. Greg, what do you think?
I would concur.
I was going to agree with that too, Mike.
All right, thank you. I need help. Let's take up the cap, capital cost hold, and the cap in general.
I make myself sick all the time.
I will say that I do concur.
He
makes himself
the thought
sick.
Of expanding the radically expanding the Prop 2 program does make me sick to my stomach. Literally.
I was just going to mention that I do see the problem with the cap formula where it says it basically assumes the old property is not environmental, it's not pollution control. So, and I ran some numbers in an Excel spreadsheet and what I did, and I see the problem with that. So we at least, in my opinion, need to fix that. So if it's a pollution control property being replaced by another pollution control property, then that probably should be excluded from that deduction, or at least modified in some way.
Could we? I'm not sure what we're working off of. There were a series of staff proposals on what to do with the new formula. Is that there are three? Is that what we should be working
they,
off?
They have a two-page information that they sent
this
out.
This option one, option two. Is that what we're
right? Okay. And current.
I'm referring to
current, that I understand the problem with the current one.
Okay.
Any discussion as I dig for my information?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out a couple of things I noticed with the options proposed by staff. The first being on option one, the equation for net present value is not correct. I can specifically say what would be the correct equation, if that would help. The denominator on the equation itself, net present value, 1 plus I to the N, the power of N, should actually be to the power of T.
Yeah.
The power of T, which is in the summation, T equals 1 to N.
You thought the other thing was going to make you sick, Don.
Can you repeat what you said again? What power is?
You've got marketable product value minus production costs over 1 plus I to the N.
Should to N, raised to power N.
Should be raised to part T.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Well, it can be T. It doesn't matter. As N is, and N is defined there as your time. So if you define T, that doesn't matter. As long as you define it, that's all that matters.
Well, the way you've got it on your summation is from T equals 1.
Okay, we'll correct that.
So N would be the total number of years, whereas T would be the incremental year for each piece of the sum.
If you look at it, I think N is defined as number of years of the life of equipment.
Correct, the total number of years.
We are going to use N as the life of equipment.
Right. It would still, the way the net present value equation should work is for each year you have that fraction.
That's what it is. N represents time. So we are saying the same thing. I think your listeners are right, but N is represent the life of equipment.
I've calculated it both ways, using N and using T.
What is the difference for you? What is the difference between T and N?
Let's say you've got 5 years. The way this equation is currently written is you would take your marketable product value minus your production costs for year one.
Mm-hmm.
Plus that same thing for year two, plus that same, so on and so forth, divided by 1 plus I to the fifth power, which is not correct.
Okay. He's saying you have to sum it each year, right?
Right.
You go one by one. So it's T, not N.
Yes, T. N is T, represent T.
Right, yeah.
So we are just arguing, there's nothing there. If you use N or T, I can use P as long as I define what it means. I can use P. P represent time, doesn't matter. So the question should work either way.
Well, you've got two different variables here. You've got T and N. N is the total number of years for the project. And T is each incremental year, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to that total number.
He's saying you have to take each calculation.
No. You are not taking the difference. It's the summation of the each year incremental. Your interest rate. You are increasing it and summing it. I know many people have problem in calculating that, and that's why we developed the second one. So you are incrementing year one, year two, year three, year four, all the way. If it's 20 years, you got to go doing that.
Right.
And sum all of them up. It's not the difference in time. In other words, because I have 5 and 2, I'm going to take the difference. It doesn't work that way.
No, but that's not what I'm saying. I think you're saying the same thing, but your equation isn't saying that.
Okay. We will check that.
So just to clarify, Rob, you're saying option one should be 1 plus I to the T? And I want to say up front, in my opinion, this is we're talking about a pretty major revision. It's now almost 240, and I kind of doubt if we'll come to a consensus today. Maybe we'll. I don't know. But this is a big change. So let's talk through as much as we can and see where we go. At a minimum, like I said, the current formula, I think, should be changed.
All three of these options are both of those options and the existing one is all basically a derivation of the same cap. There's little tweaks here and there of that one is being byproduct, the other one being a marketable product, and I think that begs its own discussion in itself. But again, just looking back at the laws and rules, I don't know where. How did this cap, I mean, I know how the cap came into being. It was for a particular case at a particular time to solve a particular problem. And we've taken that one individual formula for that place and time, and we've used that to try to go forward into the future on other things that weren't related to that existing issue back then. So just like you've looked at tier ones, and you say, I have these partial exemptions, and there's no support there to do that. We have done the same thing here. We've taken a formula, and we've got individual characteristics out there in the industry over time that have changed, and now we're trying to push them into a formula, even though this formula, the situation may not dictate for that formula. So I'm trying to figure out why we're, instead of doing a variable where applicants submit an answer or a partial use determination based on the criteria that fit, that application at that time, then the technical staff review that application at that time for the merits on that application instead of trying to fit it into an all-encompassing approach that was set up originally for an existing application at a certain time of when it was initially put in, and they've adopted it. So can you help me figure that out? I mean, why this formula seems to be the catch-all for anything out there that has its own standing.
So you're suggesting you do an analysis rather than staff just check the math?
Isn't that the purpose behind a Tier 3, where you, it's an individual case-by-case, it's partial based on the pieces of equipment or the production or the not production or what's pollution versus what's not pollution?
Well, to answer your question, if I get your question correct, before I move on, I just want to correct that 1 plus I raised to power N is not an issue, depending on how you define it. You can, if it's T, time, that's all language there. Mathematically, calculated, doesn't matter, as long as you represent N as time. I want to get that correct. That T or N doesn't matter. I can put M in there, doesn't matter. Okay? To answer your question, like what you said, if I get you right, assuming you are looking at a capital cost old, and the capital, assuming that old you are looking to replace, assuming taking the replacement, maybe where you're going. Maybe.
Well, what happens if you don't have a cost of an old? It's a new piece of equipment, and there's a dual, I guess, production and pollution aspect of it, and you don't have a benchmark to put it against. How do you do that?
Okay, where this one was, I guess, let me go back again to the basis, if you remember what we discussed last time. This one was set up to be able to compare equipment with pollution control versus equipment without pollution control. That is the basis of this. Is that right?
I don't know. I know what the formula says, but the reason that the original cap was put into place was for a particular application at that time, and that was what was adopted, correct? I mean, how old is the existing cap, and what applications were they applicable to when it was developed, is what I'm asking.
Can you repeat yourself? Can you give me an example of what you are saying? Because I'm trying to get what you are saying, get to where you are talking about.
Before the Tier 3 was adopted, there were people doing partial use determinations, correct, on the merits of each case?
Yes.
And then they adopted a cap based on an appeal or something, and it was for a particular type of equipment that was at the time of in importance. So now they've taken this formula base, and they're saying whatever's out there has got to fit into this formula base, even though it may not fit. And, you know, like we have Tier 4s, and they're under a variable category, and stuff that are partial use in those, if you're trying to fit them into this cap for Tier 3, they may not fit. So how do you, the discretion is up to the applicant to prove a point, right? Yeah. I mean, and then you guys would say yay, nay, we don't agree with you, or we have a better idea for that solution for that piece of equipment at that time. I mean, something would beg to answer this would be this greenhouse gas that Robert's talking about. We haven't experienced this yet. How do we know it'll even fit into this formula? Why are we going to be bound by a formula?
Oh, okay. I think I get your question. Last, if you remember, last meeting, we went to 3206. How 3206 asked us that we make everything uniform. And that's how making things uniform, the way we look at it from that time was, okay, since we make everything uniform, we have to have one equation that will be used for all of them in order to be used uniform. That's the way we're looking at it.
But is that uniform in methodology, or is that uniform to an equation?
That is the way we're looking at that time.
Let me say something also. 3206, I mean, the uniform and consistent has always been in the statute. What 3206 did is said, use the methods and standards that are in your rules for everything else and be consistent and uniform using those methods and standards. What was discussed during the legislative session was initially that language said use the cap, and probably there's some of you here that were actually part of those discussions that even more than I was, but at least I testified at some of those hearings. So that was the initial, at least the initial reasoning behind 3206, and that was what was in the LBB report. You use the cap for everything, and then the world will be perfect. Not okay. I understand, but that was what those initial discussions came from. That's where 3206 came from, and so that's really where staff is coming with our proposal right now. If there's something different,
well, I just didn't see it.
I think the idea was that there be, you know, basically something. A tool in our rules, like the cap, that we already have, that we can evaluate all applications against.
It just seems like that you've got a square peg, and you're trying to fit everything into this round hole, and it's not working in all cases. And, I mean, you're a staff of engineers and stuff, and when people bring things, I mean, y'all are the final say-so, and people have to rely on that credibility of what y'all say.
If I can draw an analogy a little bit. Maybe I'm not chasing too much, and those of you that are appraisers know where I'm going with this, but it's the cap, in my mind, it's kind of like saying for a property tax evaluation, you're only supposed to use the cost approach to value, and you can only apply these established depreciation factors, and that you apply it to all properties. Well, that's a formula, but actually the equity is in fair market value. Whether you might need to use an income approach on something, or you might have sales for residential properties, you might have a lot of sales or something. So I think what you're saying, more flexibility gets you to, you can use more flexibility and still get you to,
well, I mean,
equity.
And it gets back to where if you see applications on their own merits under tier threes, and you consistently see the same thing, and the answer for that type of equipment is always the same. We talked about that would move from a tier three to a tier one because it's the same fact basis behind it. And if you're going to, in the repository of your information, if you're going to keep why there was a partial use determination that went from a tier three to a tier one, there would be a calculation basis behind that. Because, I mean, basically, if you're doing a cap on this package on every industry and it's always the same answer, then basically you're not going to have a tier three because that's basically what the formula is. It's going to produce the same percentage every time. So that's what I'm saying. It would be, depending on whatever the application is and the component of the equipment in it, when we were doing the tier fours, that was the one reason is nothing would fit. So it was up to the applicant to come up with something. And then if it was credible and it met the test that you guys put it through, then y'all would either modify it, accept it, or reject it on those bases. And I think if pieces of equipment that are consistently the same all the time are coming through under a Tier 3, then that's how they go from whatever methodology that's adopted by you guys on that piece of equipment at that time, then that's how it goes from a Tier 3 to a Tier 1.
And I wouldn't disagree with anything Greg just said regarding Tier 3s and going from Tier 3s to Tier 1s. I think the problem that was identified by the legislature with 3206 and 3544 is we haven't had a Tier 4 go through uncontested. And there's a logjam of these contested cases where no one can seem to quite agree on the proper way to deal with those pieces of equipment.
We did have a bunch go through uncontested.
Well, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. There were some that went through uncontested. We currently have a number of Tier 4 cases that are contested, and we're trying to move those forward and find a way to prevent that from happening in the future. So
right.
What the legislature was pointing out in 3206 and 3544 was you've got a procedure in place that seems like it would take into account the production aspect and the pollution control aspect of these pieces of equipment. What we've tried to do with modifying the cap formula is to broaden that to encompass both Tier 3 and what we currently know as Tier 4 equipment and to say, okay, when there is this partial benefit, partial pollution control percentage, we're going to run this formula. And so again, I don't think there would be any problem with something that's currently a Tier 4 piece of equipment. If every time we saw that application and applied, you know, our formula to it, we came up with the same percentage, it was always used in a standard manner, then that would go from using the cap to Tier 1 Part A.
To say which option you prefer.
We're putting them out there for you guys to tell us. What do you think?
Well, one thing that I think clearly the same bill which set up this committee has asked is that the committee advise, the, you know, give counsel to the staff about the implementation of the chapter. So it's kind of our job to be looking at the tools that are being used, standards and methods. Okay, I would agree that the standards and methods are asked to be applied uniformly. I think the whole spirit of 3206 and what drove it is uniformity, consistency, and I'm okay with us talking about it in that context. I think Greg is teeing up a really important thing that addresses consistency as well, which is if you take the cap and you apply it to certain circumstances, and Robert has already identified that many versions of the new calculation do this too, you might create what you might characterize as inconsistent outcomes. Okay, inconsistent internally, inconsistent decision making. Kind of going back to what, you know, we've raised several examples in our prior discussion about situations that we don't like the way they look. Let's make sure we're not creating a problem, unintended consequences problem. Okay,
right.
So I think what I'd like to hear is from the engineers that do this all the time, some examples of a cap as it's applied to a given set of facts. Because I've heard anecdotally several examples of how the cap is broken in certain facts, okay? And if it is, then it's the role of this, you know, a committee to talk about, should we be moving toward a different solution, okay? And a different standard and methodology, all right? I will say that all with the caveat that if we want to go fix the problem that we all believe led to the legislation, I'm all for that. Let's fix it. Let's pull up the fact situation we're talking about, if it's the Herzig applications, and let's figure it out. But what I think our bigger job is to make sure the commission has the right tools to deal with all applications. And so I'd like to hear discussion about the cap and maybe some examples of how, in certain circumstances, it generates results that probably aren't consistent, at least not intellectually consistent. Greg, you want to?
Well, I mean, you could take it back to the hydrotreaters. How would you implement the hydrotreater scenario in a cap? Because, I mean, it essentially you have a byproduct, but in a hydrotreater, do you really have a byproduct because you're reaching within the product and you're pulling out a molecule, so it's not really a byproduct that's falling out of your process. It's, I know that's a bad example, but it is what it is. So you've been in that case, you've been asked to go in there and pull a molecule out of your process. And now what Don was talking about earlier is the resulting is now you have a byproduct from the hydrotreater that's being treated subsequent downstream. So there's an example there to where the cap, you can't really apply the cap to that situation. It's going to be outside that. Either that or you're going to say, well, once you lock yourself into that cap, then you take away a lot of options. The only other option you have is it doesn't fit in a Tier 3 is what? A Tier 2? Which is a wholly a 100%. I mean, Don?
If I may, I'd like to, I think trying to apply hydrotreaters to the cap is maybe not the best idea because I think we've kept the hydrotreaters from getting to the cap.
Well, I know, but I'm saying if you're going to try to put, if we're going to adopt this cap and you would apply that hydrotreater to that cap, how would you do it? And that's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily a fit for everything. And
well,
at the beginning
right.
of
that's
time...
That's why you have gatekeepers coming into the cap.
Right.
To keep
let's talk about a different example.
Fit out.
Just,
okay. But let me just give a little bit of... Because I want to support a little and maybe refine a little of what the staff is saying about the legislation. I think this goes back to either 2001 or 1999 with Alan Ritter's bill. Prior to that, there were applications coming to TCEQ, and the perception to us was that TCEQ was looking at them and going, yeah, that looks good. That doesn't look good. I know they did a lot more work than that. That is a very much an oversimplification. But the perception to us was they were wrestling with these issues kind of on a case-by-case basis without the sufficient systematic approach that is that we think is appropriate for property tax administration. So the legislature added 1131D to the, along with some other language, but that was really the heart of the bill, through Alan Ritter's bill. And we worked with TTARA and all the stakeholders, Texoga and everyone else, and TCEQ staff, and came up, and the commission was directed to adopt rules that that ensured uniformity and consistency of their decisions. And to make sure those rules allowed for partial use exemptions, which is what D does. So if you look at that language around there, then we came all the way to 2007. We had more legislation passed that created subsection K in the statute and a list there, the non-exclusive list. And there were arguments going on that, hey, you've got these rules that apply for everything but that non-exclusive list. The non-exclusive list gets to apply and be considered on whatever information and standards they want to suggest. And LBB said, that's dangerous. And you had the bill this session that said, apply those rules, apply your rules that require uniformity and equality on how you administer this stuff to everything, whether it be in K or not. That K doesn't change the standard. And I'm paraphrasing when I say that. And when that was discussed at the legislative level, it was often discussed at this is, does TCEQ say this makes the stuff go through their cap? I think staff, I can speak, I'm not speaking for them, but I witnessed this, were asked that question by legislative leadership as they considered the bill. Is this the language that will make sure everything goes through the cap? I think the legislators did not literally mean that exact cap. I think they meant the rules, and what it's just because of, you know, how they work with all the different issues they contracted, is it go through all these provisions to make sure everything is uniform and equal. I think the commission should, if it leads to more, to better uniformity and equality in administration, make whatever changes to the cap are necessary, including maybe bifurcating or whatever, if the case is made for that, if there's a good case for it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, with that, withstanding the cap, if they receive applications and there is a methodology that's presented and they concur with that methodology, then they would adopt that cap, whatever it is, whatever formula based for that type of component going forward, and say, this is it, and we're going to apply, anybody who applies whatever the widget is or whatever the piece of equipment is, that in that situation for that type of equipment, it would go into this formula base. And then if another type of equipment comes up and it's completely different, and it's done in a different application, that's not that same type of equipment, not used in that same scenario or system or process, then they would, somebody would fill out an application and say, this is how we think it should be. And if those guys said, no, you're wrong, or no, I think it should be this way, and they reject it, or they say, yeah, that's a good, we concur with that methodology or that formula base that's in place, and they adopt that and say, anybody else from this time forward would get that, then that's uniform for everybody who out there in the property world would get the same basis. I mean, some of the problems with the cap is you're using a byproduct. It has different values at different timelines. You have different interest rates. It's taken a value in a certain space of time. You could reapply next year where you have different fact patterns and give you a different answer. You're taking value, you're taking that value, and you're putting it to cost. It has fallacies.
You make a case for changing the cap, modifying it, refining it, maybe coming up with a two-prong test. I'm not trying to judge that argument. You may get me to agree to that, but I'm going to disagree with you on the concept that an applicant can come up with what they think is better, file that, and they can use it. I think they're clearly directed to adopt something before an application comes in, and once an application comes in, what's been adopted must be used.
And here's my difference is, it's new technology comes up, the guys in the industry know about how this new technology is implemented and its uses. They present their case for pollution control on the pollution control equipment that's embedded in that process. These guys, you know, are all engineers, professionals, etc. They are experts in the rules, regulations, and it's their bailiwick. And so you're taking one. These guys are checking that information for criteria of what it is, whether they meet, exceed those rules and regs, and whether that the process or the applicant's methodology is correct. And they're the graders of that. And if they correct it, send it back, or do whatever they need to do, NOD is produced. There's a resolution. It comes through. It's granted. If it's still not liked, it goes to the commissioners. And that's not only from their standpoint. It's from their standpoint, or not you, but from the taxpayer's standpoint.
But, Greg, that's the whole reason we had the legislation, is because we had that process in place for the Ks. We had 32 or 35 applications for the heat recovery units, and there were about six different methodologies used, and the commission didn't really know how to act. And so that's the reason.
Yeah, and that was then, and this is now. That's what I'm saying. They would adopt a methodology and say, this is what we're going to reject unless we get it in this format.
Greg, I think you're saying, though, that if the adopted rule is felt by anyone, maybe the commission, that it doesn't best capture the situation, the commission can then depart from the rule. And I strongly disagree. I think it has to be done, a rule change to account for a better formula has to be done in advance of the filing of the application.
So the formula that we're talking about is in, it's law, basically.
It's the law of the commission.
It's what,
their
rule.
Decisions are not supposed to be looking at things and saying we like this and don't like this. They do that in the policy-making process of adopting a rule. Once they do that, they become a judge that administers that rule, and their role then is ministerial.
Can you see, Don, the potential that you would adopt a rule with a formula that you apply, but you'd have some sort of an appeal process where someone could say, in this particular case, because this is a new kind of technology, this
throw
doesn't...
Throw your rules out. No.
No.
No, I think I don't think that meets what the legislature is looking for at all. What they want is what we always do in tax administration, which is set clear lines, and then they fall where they fall. And if they're not falling right, you change the policy and it applies going forward prospectively, never retroactively. That's you know, you don't, if you look at something, you get an unfair result. That you look at and you say, you know, that doesn't feel right. I think if I talked to everyone, they'd all agree with me. But it's following the rule. The rule is followed.
And my deal, Don, is not whether it produces a positive or negative outcome. It's does it produce the right outcome?
I agree. I think when we find those cases, they need to change the rule.
Yeah, and I think the role of this committee is, and this probably, maybe for sure not today, but is to talk about examples that we believe exist where the cap and the proposed options to reform the cap are not right. And so this is the iteration. We're in a three-year review cycle of the list and the rules. Let's take a look. And if the committee has issues with the current calculation, we should talk about them. I don't think we even need to reach whether in every case the commission should have engineering discretion until we've actually tried what Don's talking about. I'd like us to vet what's wrong with the cap, okay? And if there are real issues with the cap, let's try to fix them. And if we're confident that our fix will not prevent adverse outcomes, I think our recommendations to the commissioners will be different. That, you know, we're not sure you can have a magic equation. Maybe the best way to ensure consistency is to give performance standards, but we're not there yet.
because the staff has got some options in front of us. So I think we need to go through that process of evaluating the cap and talking about the bad outcome examples and whether they warrant a change in the way you do things. And if they're so bad that you can't avoid those outcomes, we got a real problem. Okay? I've already teed up a couple of policy issues as it relates to byproducts that I think are, you know, flaws in the cap. There may be a way to solve that problem that we can all agree to about what is and what is not a byproduct and or marketable product or whatever term we end up using. That's what, painfully, however, I think this committee needs to do is to take that up and look at it and talk about the adverse consequences.
And I had asked this earlier of staff, and he Emmanuel gave me a no answer, but I want to ask it publicly. Is there not, do you not have the ability to take some of the examples of applications that have already been decided on and say, if we had used option one, option two, option three on them, what would the result be? I mean, I would think that would, for example, with the Herzogs, we're getting that right, heat recovery units, you know, if you were to apply these different options, what would the result be? I think would I would find that helpful.
Choose something that it applies to. I just don't like trying to go through a lot of work around Herzogs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've addressed it in our previous item. This is a different example. I'm not saying don't do what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think we generate this equation for you all, because you remember the first time you met, you say, give us what you are thinking about. Okay. That was the basis of this. And we decided, okay, we're going to give you whatever you asked for us, and we gave you this equation, we gave you, this is what we are thinking about. And these are the options we have, we are thinking about, and we're expecting you to go over those things and add or subtract or modify. That's the purpose of this.
And I think what...
And I'll be glad to go over the equation.
Yeah, I think we started with Robert, had a couple of questions, and I think that's the process we need to go through. And Greg was opening it up, I think. I'll let him speak for himself, but what I've heard anecdotally is we've identified several examples where the cap just doesn't work. And so what we need to do, and I don't think we're going to get it done today, okay, is talk about those problems and your options solve some of them and not the others, and some of them create more problems. And so it's going to have to stop being a theoretical discussion. In order to be of any value to you guys, we actually have to talk about the examples.
But, Michael, do you think... my request has any merit of trying to have a couple of examples, but I don't know what those examples are.
But people
in this room might know, you know, particular applications.
But the three examples here, or the two with the existing one, it's basically the same equation with some different inputs, mm-hmm. but it's not completely three different options.
Okay.
Or, I mean, it's derivations of the same thing. And you know, I was trying to look more for something that's not related to each other in the form of what we have now, because I mean you're looking at one is marketable product versus a byproduct, and that's a definition, you know, and maybe you can explain why you have marketable product value and then you have, you know, how's that different from existing byproduct.
Well, what we came out with, the purpose of the main difference from the old equation is a marketable product. And how do we arrange that marketable product like you are called? The first one is the second one is the modification of the same one, but they are the same variable. Would we arrange them to make it easier to calculate it? Rather than summing the whole thing for 20 years, the second one, you won't have to sum anything, everything. But they all is comparable to another equipment because we are, like LBB rules say, we are limited to the cap. And we try to be within that cap.
But marketable is whether you sell it or not. It's where TCEQ determines that it might have a market.
If you use it internally, okay, that's what you are. What is the value of that? Instead of buying it from somewhere and you are producing and you are reusing it, what is the value of the market value for that?
Okay.
Or if you sell a product, what is the market value of that?
I agree with that concept. And I think what you're telling us is option one is your old procedure, but changing byproduct to marketable product.
That's correct.
And then option two tries to do about the same thing as option one, but in a way that's easier to calculate.
That's correct.
And so you're asking for our input on those, on those options.
Or if you have another way of calculating and using the financial information, because this one more is about money here. Mm-hmm. That's all this is all about. When it's not about emission reduction or anything like that.
When I have questions about how this stuff calculates and stuff, I talk to Wayne Frizzell or John here, who tells me how that stuff, or Roland. So, but the concept that I think this is that the staff is saying marketable, you know, byproduct gets us potentially into a debate about what that means. And that marketable product is, you know, seems to us to be what was always intended by this, is that if you're producing a product in this, but you've got pollution control, then we got to find a way to do some proportioning here. Wayne did some, there was concern about double dipping, right, that in this, I think was expressed at a previous meeting. I found Wayne's analysis that he sent out to us to be pretty strong. I mean, he kind of walked through examples, and if we think it's not strong, we think that he didn't include or analyze all the appropriate examples, or that he did his math wrong, I think that would be very instructive to us.
I'd like to do that. In fairness, I'd like Wayne to be here. I disagree that it's strong. And but I really, honestly, that example of the double dipping is just an additional argument. I think we actually have a ground on which we can reach agreement if we were to kind of figure out how to refine this tool. We think the cap's broken largely because of the way marketable product byproducts plug into it. There's some other differences with capital cost old, and we just need to come up with, you know, with some explanation of that. And I think we'll collaborate, and we need to have a discussion about that again. But I think we can have a discussion right now, and I've already teed it up, about, you know, how can we get to the bottom of what's going to be a byproduct or a marketable product, whichever. Because if you actually agree what qualifies under that term, then you know a lot more about how the cap gens out a result. And everybody agree with that? I mean, we don't know what the defined term is. And we, you know, Don and I spoke offline a little bit, you know, quickly about the idea of you know, Don's previous example of when you produce a product, you know, a byproduct enough, and it eventually becomes your business. And I said that I don't think that example happened very often. There may be extreme examples he talked about, which is interesting, kerosene and gasoline. So it's a fair comment. So let's talk about that. I think the commission would be well served by some input from the committee about how we can help them understand what is truly a byproduct that should actually be discounted out of the equation, or, you know, be a discounting factor in the equation. And the kind of thing that I'm referring to, which is something that is being recycled, which in and of itself is pollution control, okay? If it's the business of that entity, okay, and that's what this is all about, is that product part of that business, okay? We have something called SIC codes, right, and those that are familiar. I think that's an area that I'd like to explore. We're not going to be able to do it today, but between now and whenever we decide to meet again, I think we should be thinking about, you know, in the SIC codes, in the NAICS, in the SIC codes, there's always a listing of the primary products, okay? And if you ever had a situation, Don, where your primary product was no longer what got you into that first SIC code, you'd have a different SIC code. You'd be shifting SIC codes, okay? I think there's something for us to work there. I haven't thought about it long enough to be confident that it's the solution, but, you know, I think it's one of these things where if we have an example that a byproduct is so much a part of the core business after it's sold over and over and over that it overtakes any kind of pollution control benefit and becomes more about the core business, then I'm going to be agreeing with you that that's not exempt. Okay, but I think there's a huge swath of examples of things that are really pollution control, pollution prevention, recycling, that could get sucked up by this cap and may have already. So that's the concern I'm trying to prevent. So if we can make sure we can all agree about what that term means and what it doesn't mean before we flesh out the cap equation, we might simplify how the cap is calculated. The SIC code idea is one way, and we haven't put any meat to the bones on that, but I don't know what y'all's reaction is. Greg, I mean, you've calculated this a million times, and that, is that fair that
that first question kind of needs to get answered.
I agree. What's your definition of marketable versus a byproduct? I mean, that's it right there. Because if it's not your core business, and it is a byproduct or a waste product, and you're doing something with it other than taking it to a landfill or deep well injecting it, and it's for the benefit, then I think that warrants a partial exemption or something other than it being part of the production process. So I understand what Don's saying in that respect about it overtaking your business. I'm just not sure how to calc it just yet.
But you don't take it to a landfill. It wouldn't meet what I'm be talking about here if you're taking it to a landfill.
No, I'm saying you put in a process. It's a byproduct, and you were to put in a process in order to keep from taking it somewhere else. Or, and it turned out that it's better to recycle it or do something with it other than to take it somewhere else.
I think that's a good question. If you're disposing of it in the cheapest way possible, that's one thing. If you're using it to make money, that's another thing.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying if there's a driver behind it to where you're doing something because it's required and you're taking an alternative path to that, then you're saying you shouldn't be, that has nothing to do with pollution control, even though you've decided that.
I'm saying it's partially being used for pollution
control. And that's what I'm saying.
If you're also using it for, selling it as a good or service, as a good. Here we're talking about a good. And if you're also selling it as a good, then, but that's not covering your cost of dealing with this byproduct, right? It's an emission. There is definitely pollution control value there you shouldn't be taxed on. But it's not 100%.
I didn't say it was. I'm saying
that. I know. That's my view on that. So how do we determine that, and how do we calculate that, and how do we give these guys a repeatable, administrable...
Right. How do we fit it into the existing situation? So let us look at that from the definition of a marketable product or a byproduct or a waste product.
Wayne and the others of his ilk, I look at John when I say this, I'd invite them to be looking at that too, because you're the guys that have so much more experience with it, Roland, than us guys, Bennett and I do.
Yeah, then maybe my request isn't to the staff, but to the appraisers to take some of those same examples and run some numbers. And one other question, when we say capital cost old, sometimes it's really, you're comparing, because sometimes it's a new piece of equipment, it's not really a replacement equipment, you're just comparing it to a piece of equipment that doesn't have the pollution control aspect.
Yeah, that came out originally from replacement of equipment. So when you're replacing equipment, we call it capital old. But in some cases when you're not replacing it, we compare it with comparable equipment.
Okay,
that does not have a pollution control aspect to it.
But that's something we would fix in the definition, or we would fix in the formula to make sure that you could apply it in either case.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's if we have a rule, all the definition will be completely spelled out.
It seems a pretty easy fix to me. Maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but in like 17.2.3, where it defines capital cost old, if you add at the end, and I don't have the exact language, I'm just kind of speaking out of my ideas here, but it could say something like, there would be no deduction for capital cost old if it is pollution control property. Is that the intent of what we're trying to do? In other words, this is, you're taking the cost.
Well, if it's a replacement or something, you put a zero in there. I mean, if it's not a replacement.
If it's not
a comparable.
In this case, yeah, in this the first one, if it's not, you can say, hey, there doesn't have anything there, capital old on there.
But if you're replacing a pollution control property with another pollution control property.
Yeah. But for the second one, the second equation, option two, you have to look at the comparable equipment. So that's the difference between the option two and option one. Because of...
I tried to get Tim to have an opinion on this earlier, so I'll try you.
Okay.
So, do you have a preference of which one do you think two better fits your
well,
ideas?
Right now, we haven't thought about which one is better. Well, the purpose of this was prepared for you, like I said earlier.
Okay.
For you, because you requested us to do so.
Okay. You gave us ideas. We can come up with our own ideas. That's what you're
yes.
saying. Okay. All right.
And earlier, Dr. Reed requesting for us to calculate. Not that we do not have the data right now to do so, and we hate to use the assumed data to calculate something that doesn't reflect what is actually out there.
Okay. Thank you.
Before you go, I just want to define the variable there. Make sure. When you are going through your look at, because there's some misconception about the variables that we use. If you go below under option 2, where you have F factor in there, the variable are defined. Some of the variable, what F is all about there, is defined there with that equation. And I is defined as interest rate, and N is defined as number of years, because I remember we were arguing about T and all that. N is number of years. So, and then the PR and the PRO is defined by those equations on option 2. And those equations on option 2 there.
Thank you. Is it, and this might be commingled here, is this a good time to go into Part B? Or do you want to defer action on this and meet another day on this?
We could try to do the Part B, and if we feel like we've got a stumbling block, we can defer.
While you're thinking about that, can we take care of one item of business? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the minutes on the last one. I'm afraid I would forget this.
I move adoption of the minutes.
Second.
In discussion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Thanks again to TCEQ staff for doing this for us.
Very helpful.
Back to Part B.
All right. Well, I've got, and we may not get to the end of this today, but I'm going to give it a shot. It takes folks back. In 2007, when the Part B list was created, and there were three meetings in the summer of 07 of a committee that was not as statutorily created, but very similar to this one. We went through a process, and staff went back and forth with the committee in an iteration of actually describing so that it would be more meaningful to the public and applicants and the appraisal community probably, a description, creating a description for each of the B items, okay? Because we still get people saying, what's that? And my intent is, I've got something here, I'm going to distribute it, and I'll hand it out in a second, is not to actually go through the very painful process of figuring out how to change any of the V's to partial use determinations. That's not what I'm going to be proposing. What I'm going to be proposing is that we encourage a discussion of the creation of a description for each of the items to let people know what they are, and to identify those that we would agree are 100%. Because there are at least five sub-items that I've identified, two that are specifically listed in the B list, and three that are kind of sub-items within one of the B items, and you'll see what I mean in a second. So I'm gonna walk these around here real quick. So everybody's wondering whether they have the right copy. I have gone through in what you're getting, so just go ahead and hand them out. They're going to look a little sloppy. I showed this to Leo, so this is Leo's copy. No, there's enough for everybody. So
And what you're going to see, he's going to have others for some people in the audience to see. The shading is intended to kind of highlight some language or highlight what was discussed in 2007. The handwritten changes that I've made to this were an attempt to say, okay, so I basically put what was here when we last left this issue in 2007, and now the handwritten changes, which next time I'll have in some other red line strikeout version, are ways that we might improve that description. Okay? So again, if everybody in the committee's got theirs now, I'm just going to take you all through it and then folks can catch up. The things in the left side are, if you pull out the B list as it exists now, that might be helpful. If you have your Part B list in front of you, it'll definitely help our discussion. You'll see that the numbering corresponds. I've kept the B1, B2, B3 type approach. And the description or the property, it says equipment now, I'm proposing to say property, in that left column uses, in every instance except what I'm going to tell you in a second, the list here, okay? The right column includes the V's, okay? Not attempting to change the V's. There are five items, and I think I'd like to talk about that first, that I think we would agree are 100%. Because if you look at the A list as it exists now, okay, they are already either explicitly covered or they cover the same type of stuff. And so I just wanted to tee up that for discussion, okay? The descriptions in that middle column that are highlighted, those were the, what my record showed, or the last version in July of 07. If staff finds a more recent draft that was a further tweak, I'm wide open to suggestions. This is not a holy document by any stretch. I was just trying to recapture that because I think there's still value in it, because I'm going to reset everybody about this statute. It is a non-exclusive list. It's not the whole, it's not sacrosanct. Every word, you know, Cyrus asked this question earlier, can we tweak that list? I think it's entirely within the commission's discretion and is entirely appropriate for this committee to make that list be more meaningful. I hope I'm showing some good faith by not changing the column that says V in every instance, that I'm not trying to run some percentage. I'm not trying to get some kind of special treatment. I'm just saying there's some obvious stuff that we could probably go ahead and knock off the top. All right, so I will defer for another discussion whether those descriptions are perfect, because I think staff is the best expert to tell us how they would change those if they were to change them, since they originated them. I want to explain to you why I think the V's should be adjusted to 100% in five instances. In B4, flue gas recirculation components are already A83 100% exempt. Okay, we talked about this before. This is not new. We've actually referenced this, I think, at both of our prior meetings. B12 are all items that have been recognized. Now, that's a set of different things, but they're all items that have been recognized as 100%. So
to clarify, there are various items on Part A.
Various items and previous Part 2 determinations. Okay. And then B15 is a little bit different, because B15, and Don can appreciate this, in the legislative process, sometimes you get an item in a statute that gets longer and longer as the legislature continues to meet. B15 is an example of something that includes a lot of things in a list that are not all the same thing. So there's a reason they were grouped together, because they all, roughly speaking, related to a control technology category, but they're different, and I wanted to show at least some reasonableness in recognizing that some of those sub-items are probably tougher calls, and so I'm not asking for any adjustment of the V, okay? So now I've created B15A through B15F to just break out what was previously all grouped under B15,
Okay, so B15A is oxy-fuel combustion. We can talk about how that's described, but I think I would acknowledge that that is going to have a production element. It's not going to be 100%. And so I don't want to push the commission or this committee to try to bless the percentage. Keep it at V, okay? But on B15B, okay, amine or chilled ammonia scrubbing, we're talking about scrubbers. It's 100% item, okay? And so C is catalyst-based fuel emission conversion systems that'll enable scrubbing. So we think they're 100%. They don't have anything to do with production. I'm certainly welcome to staff's input if they disagree. And enhanced scrubbing technology under D. So those three sub-items we believe are 100%. E, modified combustion, tougher call. Could have a production element. I don't want to cross that bridge. Not trying to push the envelope. Leave it at V. We think it has an emission control or a pollution control benefit, but it doesn't. It's not 100%. Cryogenic technology, same thing. Okay, so yeah, I hope everybody understands kind of the thought process here, trying to get the no-brainers. We've filtered this. Certainly many among the industry that I represent think you could put other things on there. We're not taking that approach. We're taking an approach of what we think are low-hanging fruit for 100%. I will also note, this goes to the discussion we were having with Cyrus and that Robert's proposal goes to, on B16, this is the one example where I think that we should change the heading from that which was used in the statute to be a little bit more broad and not just talk about carbon dioxide, but talk about greenhouse gas. It would all be subject, however, to this parenthetical in the description that it's only in effect if the U.S. EPA adopts a final rule regulation regarding carbon dioxide as a pollutant. The reason I haven't changed that to say regulating GHGs as a pollutant is because, you know, that's kind of goes to the effectiveness of this, and I don't want to push my luck in changing statutory language, okay? I think EPA has got to do that in order for the law to enable you to go down this road. I think the practical answer is they're going to regulate carbon first. Okay, so I don't think...
Mike, did you consider... I was going to make a silly comment first. Should we also add if Abbott's lawsuit, even though he's got the name wrong of the IPCC, if that's not successful, just kidding. But would you also... I mean, this language says only if it's sequestered, which is your facility that injects carbon underground. What if EPA does regulation that just requires people to capture but not necessarily sequester or eliminate or monitor?
Or otherwise avoid the emission of.
Yeah, otherwise avoid the emission.
This is Robert's point, and right. I thought about that, and I don't have the answer, but that's definitely something I would be willing to change. Because, again, the spirit of this whole provision was what I mentioned earlier. We think EPA is going to do it. They're on a track to do it. By the time they do it, we're not going to really be, as a commission or as a committee, able to meet and change the rule. And we're going to all be subject to these pretty significant mandates. And I think the environment will benefit if this incentive is already in place. Now, I say all of that. It's still a V. We're still going to have to demonstrate the percentage. Okay, I'm not suggesting that it's 100%, okay, because it's too broad a category to say 100%. So I'm not attempting to try to, you know, circumvent what the commission's process is going to be as it's eventually, or, you know, amended or not as part of this process. I'm saying that Part B, as it looks, has some items that have some no-brainers. I think the public and the regulated community and the appraisal community would all benefit from a description that we could all agree to, that we have a better idea of what this list is. As somebody who represents the utility industry, you know, I think it's important that we give a better explanation of what these things are. So
the one item of your 100% list that gives me some concern is B12, because I'll admit that I have a lack of knowledge about how this equipment actually works. But couldn't you make the argument that maybe you're preparing those combustion or gasification byproducts for, you know, reuse I know that sometimes fly ash, et cetera, is reused in the production process where things are burned again. So isn't there the potential that some of this could be more for production equipment than strictly to control those byproduct materials?
Well, we don't have, I don't know of any example where the equipment we apply for under this category would apply for that doesn't relate to the pollution control aspect. The material itself is waste coming out, and so that's kind of the heart and soul of this whole program. We can talk about how it's described if you want to describe it in a different way, Cyrus, to maybe flesh that point out, because I think we have some flexibility in how we describe these matters. And if it would get more, you know, comfort level about, you know, assigning 100% to it, then I'm all for it.
Okay, I take it that this is for our review and chew on until the next time?
Right, and I just asked the staff to think about these descriptions, if they would have any modifications they would propose, that they'd bring them to our next meeting so we could maybe have a full discussion of that. And I know you don't have to, I'm not asking for it in writing. I think it's really just kind of like we did with the A-list. It'll be a wholly short conversation, hopefully, but...
Okay, there's been a lot of great discussion today.
Everybody get kicked out.
To descend on. Like I said, we talked earlier about, you know, providing some information to us at a later date. As you know, we have a rule timeline, and that we will start running the rule through management review on April 1st. So the sooner that you can get us your comments, either as a unified committee or individually, the better. We can incorporate all your comments and review them for consideration as we move the rule through management process. I know some of the decisions are very, very, very hard to make, so we're flexible with that. So we could accept them during April, but it's really difficult to move a rule through management review when we don't have everyone's comments. So if it's unified, great, but if it's individual, we can take them as well. As you know, it's a proposal, so after it's proposed, you'll again have an opportunity to comment. So the real key thing is to cast your net wide and make sure that your ideas are in the proposal so they're able to be commented in the adoption period.
Right.
And y'all talk about meeting again. If that's a physical meet, that's logistics for us, so we like to kind of have a few dates for us to be able to look at room availability, because that's very tight here at this agency. So, but if it's just something that y'all are going to do electronically through email or something, that's fine. So just whichever that may be.
I envision, and others can feel free to give your opinion, but I envision summarizing this and get to the committee first, and probably not even talking staff until the committee's okay with it. Then we submit it to the staff, or possibly copy the staff and get their input too, to see if they have any.
In case they have something they want to tell us.
Okay, all right, that's fine. And then we can start getting on the timeline. And I remind everyone that according to the timeline that TCEQ gave us the last time, public comment period will begin July 2nd, and there will be a public hearing July 27th. And is all this on the website? I didn't get it from the website, but it is. Okay. So final adoption is scheduled for December 1st, I believe. So we have quite a long period here.
Check our bylaws.
Pardon?
We did the minutes.
We did the minutes.
Yeah, we're good people.
Yeah.
Tim, is your view of the bylaws that we can take it at? Take a vote on a motion and give a recommendation via email? Did we address that? I don't remember. Sorry.
I mean, I don't think that's something that was contemplated in the bylaws.
Okay.
Is that your truth?
Okay.
I'd offer a motion to amend our bylaws to allow this committee to take a vote by email when there is no objection from any member of the committee that we take that vote by email.
Well, would it do the same thing to allow us to say those being affected with the unanimous votes?
Well, actually, I might have an objection if I know you're voting no. Right? So...
I think it causes a little bit of difficulty with quorum requirements. It causes a little bit of difficulty ensuring that everyone received and had time to review the proposal. I'm just writing about it out loud right now. I think there's a couple issues that would have to be fully vetted out before.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to facilitate your timeline.
No, I understand.
I think we need to meet again. Yeah. I think that the timeline is way too short to hope to reach some resolution on some of these critical issues.
Well, do we need to meet again before April 1st? How much time?
Thursday.
If we can't meet here, we can meet at the Municipal League. We have a large conference room, so facilities are not a problem if the committee needs to.
Okay. If we do, we'll certainly let you know. And check. Well, we'll check your calendar too. Okay. I don't see a need personally, unless all of you do. And correct me if I'm wrong. We can get what we can put in by April 1st. We still have time to work through the process or work with you through the process. Is that correct?
Certainly. I mean, we can look at any advice that you give us as it's going through the management review and weigh that as that goes through the course. We have to start our rule, or it gets behind the ball and there's not adequate information for management to review. So it will go, as we said, it will go as is and with what we have, and then if there's compelling evidence that we need to, we will look at that as we go through the management.
I think in our initial meeting, at least, I think we were told that normally we would meet probably quarterly, and that might be less, like certainly more, like in these situations, but we'll stay flexible with that. I am also a little bit aware, because I'm usually in the audience watching these kind of meetings, and it's kind of like the legislature. It's people breathe easier when we're not meeting, when we're not considering things, and I understand that part of it too. So I guess what I'm saying is we can meet as needed, but I don't want to cause any unnecessary instability in the program.
It seems like we passed a resolution today and that we need to act on the implementation of that.
Correct.
But we still have two other issues, which are the Part B and what we think about the capital cost equation. So it seems like those two decisions still need to be vetted. But I doubt we can do that before April 1st, but maybe we could do it soon after that.
Yeah. We're batting 500, though. That's Hall of Fame. It's two for four.
Speaking for those of us, this is selfishly, but those of us in the tax business, and I know Roland's in this too, and John and others, but April is extremely busy. So, but we can, if we have to, we can try to fit it in. Pardon? That's okay. That's a week after Easter.
Right. The 8th would be better for me. If anybody had an objection to the 8th,
I think that's when there's a public meeting here on the oil and gas rules. So there may be some of. Yeah.
I was getting annoyed that that's correct. I mean, it didn't necessarily have to be this room. We could, if we could get two dates, that would be great. Then we could, if there's no availability on the 8th, on any room, then we could go to the other date.
And I guess we don't have to decide now, unless you want us to. We could always, by email, coordinate everybody's, and then publish it.
Okay. Sure. Maybe everybody could look at the 2nd and 2nd and 9th. I might be able to make the 9th work, but.
The 2nd and the 9th?
I mean, it's next week, but.
Is it next Friday or?
That's good.
Yeah. Oh, it is Good Friday.
Yeah, it is Friday.
That's bad luck to propose Good Friday. Isn't it? I think we should deliberate by email about a calendar date. I think we should all kind of agreement that we should try to meet again to deliberate over the two items that we haven't resolved, which is the cap options and the Part B. I think
byproduct, marketable product.
Yeah, which is part of the cap.
Yeah, right.
Thing. The good news is that the commission has by April 1st kind of vetted the Part A with the committee, and it has a resolution to the at the site, and we're going to be able to knock out the implementation of that, I would say, in a couple of days. So if the staff's comfortable with starting the engines with those two of the four covered, and the committee's committed to meet again to try to come to resolution on those other two, I know that my view is that the Part B piece should be easy if we collaborate, and we might even be able to have an email exchange ahead of time to facilitate. I would just encourage everybody to, maybe we should be exchanging emails between now and whenever we set our meeting, so that much of the deliberation won't happen live on the next meeting. The next meeting is about wire, you know, details.
And I will reiterate our staff. They said they've given us two options other than the current cap formula. So if the committee members, I think we're flexible to come up with other ideas, as long as it's sound logic.
And just reiterate the prior request that staff give us input on the Part B list between,
in email?
By email, by neck, and again, just a discussion purpose, and we'll flesh it out at the next meeting. But that, I think that would be good, so that we're not doing it live at the next meeting.
Right.
That would help us not have to have another meeting.
Okay. I know we're getting close to the end here, but I want to give the public one more time. If you have very brief comments, I want to avail you of that. Okay, thanks for your patience. I can imagine it was miserable sitting in the audience through all of this, so thank you. Thank you for being here. And any other old business, new business? I'm rushing through this here, but
do you want to throw out any possible dates for meeting? Just for, I mean, it seems up in the air.
Possible dates are
I can't
April
make,
9th?
I cannot make the 8th. I'm going to be in court that night.
Okay. So April 9th, or what about the rest of that week? Okay, just not Thursday, just not the 8th.
Okay. Couldn't do the 5th, but the 7th. 7th.
That's week of the 12th off limits, Roland, is that what you're saying?
It's getting close. But
getting close.
We can still do it. I'm still
That's probably why we need to coordinate it through email.
Yeah.
So if you'll just, I guess, send me an email with your when you're not available. Maybe that's easier. Or when you are available, either way. Then we'll go from there. And we'll, of course, put it on the website. And if everybody's, I'm stepping outside a little bit, but if you signed up for our, I know I get automatic emails from TCEQ when certain agendas change or whatever, and I think this is on it too. Correct? Okay, yeah. Should look at it closer. So I encourage you, if you're not signed up for that, that's a good way to
correct. We have a place in the web pages for Prop 2 if you are not signed up for receiving information on any items that are posted on the website relating to tax relief. If you go there, it'll have some instructions to how to sign up. And then once you sign up, anything that gets updated on that web page automatically gets sent to your email address.
All right. The motion to adjourn does not require a second, so if even one of you want to go home. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you can take it.
Have a good one.